Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Autumn Semester 2015. Lecture 15, delivered on October 21, 2015. The title of this lecture is Net Present Value and Internal Rate of Return.
Today, Net Present Value and Internal Rate of Return. The general topic here is what used to be referred to as capital budgeting decision making. In other words, we're going to find out how traditionally companies decide whether or not to take on projects. Most of this you've actually already seen, I'm almost sure you have, in this class. It's just an extension of present value analysis, and there's a way to do it on the calculator. So I'm going to show you on your My Finance Lab calculator exactly how to do these problems. It's really very easy. You just got to make sure you key in the numbers right. Bear with me 1 minute while I pull that up here. I'll show you in a minute. Again, this will take a little bit of time. Well, let's try that again. There. And I'll turn on the screen here in a little bit once I've motivated the actual topic. EDU. And there we go. Now, what the hell do you mean my name is wrong? Don't tell me my name is wrong. There. Okay. Anyhow. Bear with me. I just want to pull up the financial calculator so I can get it, use it a little later here. Okay. Anyway, look. We're going to put money out to start a project. And then, if all goes according to plan, we'll have money come in from that project. In other words, we will generate internal equity. In other words, we'll earn, we hope, a profit from it. And the first thing, of course, we'd have to do is project what we're going to earn off the project. We're going to put that off for a while. And we're going to just sort of work with the idea that we have projections for the cash flows. And let's start with a simple problem here, okay? A project costing, let's say $12,000 initially will generate $4,000 the first year, $3,000 the second year, $2,000 for the following, three years, okay, that's two, and 1,000 in its last year, at which time the project will end. And I'm going to throw in something here with a salvage value. Of $200. This is a traditional thing. Now, in other words, at the end of the project's life, you can sell what the equipment or whatever it was for a few bucks. Now, the question would be, is this a go or a no-go? The discount rate to use for these cash flows is 6.5%. And again, as I've told you before, for the time being, I pull them out of my butt. Later, I'll show you how we actually could assess the discount rate. It's not a hard thing. It's called the capital asset pricing model. Not hard at all. Now, the question is, do we say yes or no? There is no in-between. It's just going to be an up or a down. And that's how it has to be in business as well. We can't quibble, well, maybe, maybe not. Just say yes or no and be done with it and move on to some other project to look at or something else that you have to do with your time. So if I were to draw this out on a timeline, I've got at year zero, I'm going to push out $12,000. That's a negative. And then year one, a two, three, four, five. I think there's 6 years involved here, maybe. Okay. In year one, I'm going to pull in $3,000. Is that right? No, $4,000. I'm sorry. Four grand. Year two, I'm going to pull in $3,000. Years for the next following 3 years, so that'd be three, one, two, three, I'm going to pull in $2,000. And then the final year, I'm going to pull in $1,000. And I'm also going to pull in a $200 salvage value. Now we're assuming, and this is very typical, that the cash flows occur at the end of each year. If it is otherwise, it will be very explicitly stated. But generally speaking, we assume that all the cash flow for a year we recognize at the end of the year. And you can do it more tediously if you want, but honestly, I don't see a whole lot of companies doing it more tediously than this. So, by the way, in the sixth year, don't goof around with it. Just say the year six cash flow is $1,200. That's all you do is just add that right there on it. And don't worry about it after that. But don't forget to add it. If there's a salvage value, put it on the last year's cash flow. Realistically, in the RW, the real world out there, there is going to be some cash value. You sell the equipment to some company that buys it up. You just get it. You don't keep it for sentimental purposes. You move it out of the building. Unlike some things like, for example, interestingly enough, businesses that keep equipment around for ages, you have to wonder, what are they thinking? Like, for example, I went to a downstairs cave. There's a place down here that normal people aren't supposed to be going to. I wasn't supposed to. I got in there. I'm not sure how. Well, yeah, I do know how. I broke in. And I looked around, and there were all of these old computers. Now, when I'm talking old, I'm not talking like 2000, 2002. I'm talking about 80s, 1980s stuff. Why didn't you sell it when you stopped using it? Why didn't you just dump it off? Instead, they put it somewhere. And I've seen this in a few companies, too. Why are you keeping that printer? That's what we called a dot matrix printer back in the 1980s. Well, you never know when we might need it. You couldn't even turn the thing on. I don't think there was a cable that you could find anymore. So there's something to be said for, yeah, there should be a salvage value. Get rid of the stuff at the end of the life of the project. That's just a little comment. So when you get out there to business, if you find the old equipment sitting around, say, get rid of this stuff. We don't need it. Anyway, here's the thing, though. Is this project a yes or a no? And all you do to answer that question is you take the present value of these cash flows, bring them back to the present at your discount rate here, 6.5%, and simply add those to the negative cash flow at the beginning and see what comes out. If it's a positive number, you say yes to the project. If it's a negative number, you say no to the project. And it can be, actually, in real life, I found that oftentimes it's a small amount of positive or negative. And you just have to call it as that. If you got a project that is massively positive net present value, as we call it, you should ask, how could this project possibly not have been seen by some other business before we saw it, if it's that delicious? So seeing massively positive NPVs shouldn't be, you should kind of be suspicious of that. Seeing massively negative NPVs, yeah, that's going to happen because some ideas just suck. Okay, here, I'm going to show you how to do this on a calculator. Now, the TI-83 has its own routine for doing this. And if I think about it, maybe I can show you how to do it on that. I might do that on next week. But the calculator in my finance lab is really just kind of a nice little thing for doing it. But you got to watch how we do it. It's not hard at all. First thing you do is you hit reset, clear all the memory buffers out, and then you hit cash flow, CF. Now, you see that CF0? That's your outlay. That's your initial outflow of money. In this case, 12 grand negative. Don't forget to put the pos neg on it. 12000 and hit the pos neg button, okay? Now, hit enter. Now go down. Hit the down arrow. And it's going to say, okay, what's your first year's cash flow? And I can't even read my 4,000, okay? 4,000. Hit enter. Now you go down, and it's going to say, how many times did that happen? The default is 1. And if it's 1, you just go on down. What was the cash flow to? It was 3,000. Hit enter and go down. How many times did that happen? Just once. So we can move on down. Cash flow 3, oh, there we go. That was $2,000. Enter. Now go down and say, what was the frequency of that one? Well, that one happened 3 times. Enter. And go down. And you had one last year that was $1,200. Whoops. Enter. Go down. What was the frequency of that one? That one was once. Now, I'm going to hit enter on that one. Now, the last thing you're going to do is key in your discount rate. 6.5%. Hit the I over Y button. I'm just testing your ass, okay? I just wanted to make sure you were watching what I was doing there. That's good. See, I wanted you to see how easy it is to make a mistake doing this. And, okay, I over Y. There. Happy now. Okay, compute the net present value. Ooh, ouch. Nope. Kick it out the door. It's over. It's a negative net present value of $106.65. That's all there is to it. That's traditional decision making. You just it's a net present value, NPV. Now, I'm going to draw something here on the board for you, and then I'm going to show you the other part of this. Now, most, I should not say this. Companies should use net present value. Many do. But there's another one that is as popular, and it's called the internal rate of return method. And I'll show you what this is. Look. If I were to plot the net present value on this axis, on the vertical axis, and I were to plot the discount rate that I used on the horizontal axis. Oh, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5%, 6%, 7%, 8%. Okay. Now, let's say 100, negative 100, et cetera, down, positive, negatives. Here's the thing. I found out that at a discount rate of 6.5% right here, my net present value was a little bit negative, a little more than $100 negative, right there. Let me go back. I'm going to just do something real quick here. Suppose that someone came to me and said, well, you should have used 5%, not 6%, okay? 5% for the I over Y. Compute the net present value. Oh, geez, at 5%, it's a positive net present value. 366.20. That's very cool, by the way. You don't have to key in the cash flows again. So at 5%, this puppy was 366, up here about. You would find that as the discount rate goes down, the project becomes more positive. As you use a higher discount rate, the project becomes more negative in its net present value. Let me draw that a little bit more cleanly. That's a net present value curve. So I had already made the decision to use 6.5%. That was from a different model. But the point I'm making here is that at lower discount rates, NPVs are always going to be positive. At higher discount rates, NPVs are always going to be negative, are going to be more likely negative. That's, by the way, a war that I've seen a couple of times when I was doing consulting. What discount rate to use? Marketing folks would say, use a low discount rate. You can see why they would want a low discount rate used by the project analysts, because that would be more likely that it would be positive. And the finance people would say, no, it should be a higher discount rate by the capital asset pricing model or by some other reasoning. So you see, there's kind of this war. Higher discount rates are going to lead to more project rejections. Lower discount rates are going to lead to more project acceptances. But there's a special place right here, a special place, where it has a net present value of zero. What discount rate is the fulcrum between yes and no? The internal rate of return, and write this down because this is a classic essay question for exam 2. Hint, hint. Nudge, nudge. The internal rate of return is the discount rate that makes the net present value zero. The internal rate of return is the discount rate that makes the net present value zero. Now, you have to say it just like that, because if you leave out, there are a couple of words in there that if you leave them out, I would can your answer on exam 2. But this is just, it's sort of like if I find the internal rate of return, well, then I've got my fulcrum. God. Did you pull something doing that? So, by the way, you do the same things you did for NPV. Cash flow, frequency. But instead of compute NPV, you compute IRR. And there it is. The internal rate of return of this project is 6.15%. In other words, if I used any discount rate below 6.15%, I would accept the project. If I used any discount rate above 6.15%, I will reject the project. As you can see, just in this freehand graph that I did here, you can visually see how close, visually you can see it. I wouldn't recommend you do it that way. Just use the calculator to get the exact answer. And let me tell you, back before calculators, this was a pain in the derry rear to find the internal rate of return. Because what you would have to do is try one discount rate. Oh, that's negative. Try another discount rate. Oh, that's positive. Okay, let's narrow the gap. You would have to go back and forth until you got to a certain degree of accuracy what exactly the percentage rate was that NPV was zero at. That was awful back in the day. Now with these calculators we've got now, it's just like, boom, it's there for you. So be grateful you live in the 21st century. Anyway, 6.15%. That's your fulcrum. Now, let's see if I can test you to see if you get the concept. And we'll make sure you get the concept here. Okay. You were working on a project. Okay. You were given the cash flows, positive and the negative initial cash flow, and then you were given the positive cash flows. And I'm your lower level boss. And I said, just get it done. And you said, well, what discount rate should I use, sir? And I said, well, the big boss of finance, the chief financial officer, will be in tomorrow to tell you the discount rate to use. Okay. Well, you work it out and you find out that the internal rate of return, see, you don't need a discount rate to do that. You just find it. Okay, the internal rate of return you found was 9.22%. Tomorrow comes, and you're just sitting there at your happy little cubicle, and you hear the stereo music go from playing Taylor Swift to ba 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 ba. Uh-oh, chief financial officer coming in, and I come up to you. Do not fail me. No. The discount rate you should use is 9.5%. As I'm walking away, you call back to me. Excuse me, evil master.
What?
Tell me.
You probably shouldn't do the project.
Don't do that. You never quibble with a Sith. Never. I mean, God.
Good luck. Don't want that.
Yeah, you don't want that, man. Yeah. What did Luke do? He was hanging off there. No, I won't join you. He said, well, maybe I will, maybe I won't. No, he said no. And, of course, then he fell nearly to his death. I know, right? Isn't this good? Okay.
Bad.
What should you say? What do you say?
Don't do the project.
Why not? And I said,
and you said your rate of return is 9.5.
So what will happen? If you did an NPV calculation, it would come out
negative.
Yeah, you don't even have to do it. Again, he found that the internal rate of return of the project was 9.22%. When he later found out that I wanted a discount rate of 9.5%, he knew without even doing NPV analysis that it was going to be on the lower side of the NPV's curve. That's all you needed to know. That was it. Game over. And And I've promoted you to captain. The original captain, he had some kind of an asthma thing that happened. It was, I mean, it wasn't like I. Later you'll find out why he had that little breathing thing happen. But anyway, you see, once you get the internal rate of return, you just wait for them to tell you what the final answer is going, what the discount rate is, and then you can instantly say. In this case, I know that with the project that I showed you in the example, numerical example, the internal rate of return was 6.15%. So if anyone had said anything above that as the discount rate, that would have been, I would have just said no right off the bat. Now I'm going to tell you a twist on this one. I'm not sure that the book actually brings it up explicitly. I'm remembering they mention it, but it's actually surprisingly popular in corporate America, in some Treasury departments. It's called a hurdle rate, and I ran into it in consulting. Here's the concept of a hurdle rate. There's just sort of like a company-wide, this is the hurdle rate. This is the hurdle rate. They just say, all projects must meet this hurdle rate. All projects must meet this hurdle rate. What they mean by a hurdle rate is that it would essentially, let's say that they set the hurdle rate at 7%. There's the hurdle rate. No project with an internal rate of return below that will be accepted. Any project with an internal rate of return above it will be accepted. And it was one of my better consulting jobs. It was a larger company. They actually paid me on time, which I consider to be a very big thing. They also had a great accounting policy. They paid in cash. But the thing was that we were talking about some projects, and I was going through and looking at what projects there were coming up so that I could make disclosures about them in a filing with the SEC. And they mentioned, their hurdle rate was 7%. It was actually higher than that. If I remember, their hurdle rate was like 12%. And I said, okay, well, in other words, they will just say no to any project that has an internal rate of return below that. So you see why they'd say no to it is because if the internal rate of return in this project, I've got a hurdle rate here of 7%. The internal rate of return came out to be 6.15%. So the project would be negative at their hurdle rate. But if I had found that the internal rate of return was, let's say, 8%, that project would have been positive at their hurdle rate. It was just sort of like a cutoff. Just find the internal rate of return. If it's lower than the hurdle rate, no. If it's higher than the hurdle rate, yes. And go ahead.
How do they determine
that? That's exactly right. It was the first time in real life I had run into it. And I said, well, where did it come from? And they just said, well, that's the way we do it. That's how we roll. And I was just absolutely mystified. Where did this come from? And another interesting issue about that was, when was this decision made? As I found out more, they'd been using this for, I don't know, maybe 4, 5, 6 years. So in other words, they didn't change it with changing interest rate environment. It just was there all the time. Interest rates in the economy go up, they didn't adjust it. Interest rates in the economy go down, they didn't adjust it. It was just the way they did it. It's one of those things where there are certain people you don't ask, why are you doing this stupid thing? Because they'll just stare at you blankly. Well, that's the way we do it. Okay, can you tell me why you do it? What's the purpose? But anyway, and then I've ran into other companies that were doing it, just establishing it. Yeah, go. Well, to the extent, here's the thing about it. Interestingly enough, if you think about where you establish a hurdle rate, the higher you establish it, the higher the risk of the project would have to be to clear the hurdle. In other words, an internal rate of return of 3% would point to a project that was very low risk. An internal rate of return of 12% would point to a much riskier. So what essentially they were doing was establishing a risk profile for new projects. So the question of does it work, well, the answer would be, well, they have chosen to be a higher risk company. And interestingly enough, if interest rates are falling and they're still holding on to this high hurdle rate, relatively speaking, they would be taking on relatively higher risk projects in a low risk environment of interest rates. But if interest rates skyrocket, they would end up taking on more lower risk projects. So in a way, it kind of balanced itself out, I guess. They were successful. And there's an old saying, when a donkey talks, you don't correct its grammar. And this company was profitable. It was just a decision-making framework that they used. And so do understand that if you do go out there in that real world, you might hear about the hurdle rate. And it's surprisingly common. I've run into it ever since then. Sitting at a table with some executive types in Treasury last year, we were having a dinner, and they brought up a hurdle rate. And I didn't say anything. I just listened. Sure enough, they used the hurdle rate method. So it's the hurdle rate method is sort of like a twist on the internal rate of return method, which is a twist on the net present value method. Here's the danger. Here's the big, big danger in it. And this comes from the world of mathematics. It turns out that internal rate of return is not a good way to do project analysis for all projects. It's safer to do net present value analysis because internal rate of return analysis actually has a mathematical flaw in it. If the cash flow switches sign only once, the curve will look like that. But if the project switches sign from negative to positive to negative to positive, that son of a bitch has two internal rates of return. You might remember this from your ancient days of mathematics. NPV is linear, is monotonic, one root if cash flow goes negative to positive and then stays positive. But it has two roots if it switches negative, positive, negative. It has three roots if it goes negative, positive, negative, positive. Oh, actually, it misses this one. Kind of nicks it. The point there being that you should use internal rate of return only if the project goes positive, only from negative to positive. If it goes negative to positive to negative, or negative positive to negative to positive, any more than one sign switch, the internal rate of return gives what we call spurious results. Your calculator will actually give you an answer, but probably what it has done is it has originally guessed. Let me show you. Let me show you what would happen, probably. With your calculator, if you gave it a cash flow negative to positive to negative to positive, what the calculator would give you, it would give you an internal rate of return. It'd say, here it is. But what it would have done is it would have done an original guess closer to one of these roots than to the other one. So what it will give you is the one that it was started estimating with first when it was going back and forth in its little silicon mind. It'll look like, oh, here's my internal rate of return, no problem. it won't recognize that there were two internal rates of return, and or three or four, because it'll just go with whatever was its best original guess. But the point is, which one of these is the right internal rate of return? That's the big question. That answer is, well, you can't do that. There is a trick, and I hate this trick. The book shows you this trick, and I almost feel dirty telling it to you. There is a twist on internal rate of return called modified internal rate of return. Modified internal rate of return. Now, there are variations on MIRR. There are variations on MIRR. And I'll just tell it to you. You take the negative cash flows in the project. They might occur several years out, and then another negative cash flow. So you take all the negatives, and you bring those back to the present. You take all the positives, and you take those out to the future. And then you have one negative and one positive, and you find the internal rate of return of it. A variation on that, which is actually more common. You take all the negative cash flows and find the present value of those, including the one that started the project negative. You're kind of looking at me like, the hell are you talking? Hey, watch, watch. Let me show you this. Here. Suppose that initially, you've got negative $5,000. Then you run the project for a year. Let's say you run it for a year, and you got $3,000 that you make. But year two, you have to throw more money into the project, so it's got negative, let's say, $2,000, more money you put out. And then in years three and four, you get, let's say, $4,000, and then $3,000. And then in year five, you have to put in another $1,000 so that in years six and seven, you get $1,500 and $1,000. Believe it or not, that's actually not that unusual. It's not that for projects to require upgrades along the way. A lot of companies try to avoid doing that, but it can happen. It can happen. Sometimes unintentionally it happens, though, I should point out. Now, the modified MIRR method, the best one. Now, this isn't the one the book tells you. I think the book tells you to take do it another way. But the MIRR, which you would learn in other classes, and if you ever ended up working in finance, you would probably do it this way. You would take all of the negative cash flows, just pull those out, and take the present value of those. In other words, this one you would discount back 2 years, this negative 2,000. You would discount this negative 1,000 back 5 years, and you take those present values and add them to the negative 5,000, okay? And then, once those were out of the picture, you would do an internal rate of return with this money negative, all the negative right here, and then just zero out the years where it was negative along the way and just do it as a normal internal rate of return. That's MIRR, modified internal rate of return. Now, there are variations on this. There's one variation that says take the negatives back to the present, take the positives out to the future, to the last year, and then find the internal rate of return for a project that has this big wad here at the first, then zero, 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 all the way out, and then this big wad of positive out here at the back. Yeah. Oh, of course they would. I know, right? Yeah. His point is that, I mean, this is going to be all kinds of twisted. But, I mean, in the world of finance, you come out with a number, and if you say it with enough certainty, not with that mealy mouth probably, you just say, yeah, this is what it is, and my new friend, Darth, DV as he lets me call him, says, okay. Yeah, you got numbers. Are they good numbers? Not really. That's why NPV is a better method. It doesn't play with this getting into the world of odd little mathematical backdrops and all that with positive, with two roots, second degree and third degree polynomials and all that kind of stuff. You just get nice, normal, you got a plus, a positive number or a negative number. But that requires that you make a stand. What's your discount rate you're going to use? In other words, the NPV method, you got to have a discount rate. Okay, now, back to the normal world. Back to the normal world. You got to make a decision on a project. Interestingly enough, suppose that you had two projects. Now, you got to choose one or the other. We call that mutually exclusive. Mutually exclusive. Now, if all you use is NPV, you just take the higher NPV project. Now, mutually exclusive can happen. Believe it or not, it's not that unusual. Suppose that you've got one piece of land, and you've got to decide which of two projects you're going to use with that piece of land. Or you've got one technology that you've patented, and you can't do more than one thing with it. There are situations where you could have different projects competing. And another term that I've used in the past, back in the day, we call those competitive projects. In other words, you got to choose one of them because they use something that they can't share it. It would be sort of like you, sir. There are two different projects that could use you. We can't split you in two. Well, we could, but then you'd just be bitching all because you'd be bleeding all over. So the deal is that we've got to decide which of these, because you have a unique skill set. You're the one who developed the technology. We can't have you do two different projects. So we've got to decide which one of those. With NPV analysis, it's very easy. Just choose the one with a higher NPV. Okay, which one's going to make you more money at the present time from our present analysis. Internal rate of return. You use the internal rate of return method, choose the one with the higher internal rate of return. There's a really nasty scenario, though. It has to do with the cash flows, and they explain it in the book. It's not that hard to think about, though. You could do both projects, internal rates of let me just write up an example here. I'll just write an example here. Project. Okay, project one, project two. NPV, IRR. Project one has an NPV of $500. It has an internal rate of return of 9.4%. Project 2 has an NPV of $600, but it has an IRR of 8.7%. That can happen. It can. That's why, okay, have you ever heard that story, that line, I looked into the abyss, and the abyss looked back at me. That's not how it works in corporate America. You look into the abyss, and the abyss farts at you. That's why you don't look at both NPV and IRR. Do one or the other. Then you won't see this. But if you do see this, and this is just, actually, this is just my recommendation. Go with the NPV method. Because you know that the IRR can be problematic. And so if you have the courage of your convictions, you're going to say, I used a good, accurate, best practices discount rate. I found the NPVs of the projects. They're mutually exclusive. So I'm going to select project two because it has a higher NPV. And my discount rate I use to get that is defensible. With project two, yeah, it has a lower internal rate of return, but I'm not going to worry about that because I know that internal rate of return is a slightly less reliable mechanism. Unless your corporate environment is all into IRR, and then you just say, whatever, the IRR, you shouldn't have even done the NPV if they're all that into internal rate of return. Don't even look at what the NPV said because it might be that abyss farting at you. Okay? Just be aware of that. Know that. But that's a mutually exclusive thing that can happen. Now, there's a dark side to everything that I'm telling you here. There's a dark side. The dark side is that, do you see the projects that where the cash flow, the positive, is loaded toward early years are going to be more likely to get accepted than projects where the cash flows are loaded to the back years? Projects that have long lives. They never really give you a ton of money in any given year. Are going to be less likely to be accepted than projects that have, bam, whap, 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 4 year, there you go. That's a major deficiency in our corporate thinking. It's not something that I can fix for you right now. It's not something that I can tell you how to repair without going into things that would probably ensure that you never got a job, like revamping the entire corporate business model at a very deep level, and indeed our entire economic way of thinking. But do know this, and one of the things that I'll do in this course, I won't bullshit you. This is how we have come to an economy where immediacy is so important in corporate decision making, and long term is so lacking. Many years ago, I believe it was the communist leader Mao Zedong was asked by a reporter, the ancientness of the Chinese society was being discussed, and they said, well, this experiment in America, it's been going on for 200 years now, and it's just democracy, free markets. What do you have to say about it? It's obviously more successful than yours is. And Mao Zedong just kind of sat back, yeah. Not nearly enough time to tell. Not nearly enough time. Because he was thinking in a long game of thousands of years, and our model, our experiment, had been working for 200 years. That thinking that goes on in other cultures is being washed away. But do recognize that that's on play here. I'm going to bring up one more method. I ran into this in small companies, and I still, every now and then, hear about it. It's a method that you should not use. But, I mean, even like 30, 40 years ago, this would have been pretty much the normal way of deciding on a project. And it's still the way. I've even heard this in recent times. It's called the payback method. The payback method. It's really simple. All it does is you set a number of years. All company projects have to be able to pay back the original investment in. So I say any project this company takes on has to pay back the original investment in 4 years. That's all there is. So in other words, I can have a project, let's say, one, two, three, four, five, six. You put out $10,000. Year one, $3,000. Year two, $4,000. Year three, $2,000. $2,000. $1,000. $1,000. The payback on this project would be, oh, I'm sorry, that's year zero. It's negative. The payback on this $10,000 would occur 4 years out. A little less than 4 years out. And then you just compare that to the company's payback period policy. All projects must pay back within 4 years. And you say, yeah, this one will do it. Go. That was extraordinarily common before the age of business colleges and people learning best practices methods. To this very day, I hear small business people who don't have any education in finance. They've obviously, they're terribly deficient in their lives because they never had me as a professor. They still use this. Yeah, payback. That payback is 5 years, and I just hold on 3 years. Got to pay back in 3 years, or I'm not going to take it. You can see. Did I just have a small stroke? What the? Oh, seriously? God, I gotta quit eating greasy foods. I think they're clogging my arteries. Okay, here. The payback method, essentially, the first thing that it doesn't do is it doesn't take into account the present value, the lesser amount that money will have in the future than money has now. That's the first thing that it's flawed on. The second thing is, it's another one of those methods where you just pull a number out of your butt and you just use that number. Well, we've always had a 4-year payback period, and that's what we're going to keep using to this day. I consulted for small companies that did payback method. I could not convince them to get off it, get away from it. Just a few months ago, I have my car worked on at this place that's kind of like a grease shop, and they're successful, but they were talking about getting hydraulic lifts, new hydraulic lifts that have computerized things in them and all that new safety features. And the owner was talking to me about it. He said, payback on those is like 6-7 years. He said, I'm not into that. He didn't tell me what his payback period was, but he had something in his mind, and this was not going to have a payback period that was going to meet his internal decision-making thing. He just wasn't going to do it. So it's out there. It's still used. And I kind of wonder how many decisions are made on the fly for small things that go under the radar, just thinking about this payback method instead of doing just a classic NPV analysis. So there it is. It's out there, and it's just another one of those methods. Now, I've covered most of the material, hit the homework. I've given you until next week to get everything done in Chapter 8, and I'll cover a little more of it on Tuesday, but that's all I have for you. Thank you.